Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Musical Connections Podcast. It is a show where you'll discover more about the music of Newfoundland and Labrador. So, if you're out there, join me as we explore what makes Newfoundland and Labrador's music scene so much different and so unique than our other contemporaries. And be a part of my mission of growing it one song at a time. So let's get connecting for another week. On this week's episode, I connect with singer-songwriter, graphic designer, and overall creative, Jerry Stamp. I talked to Jerry all about his upcoming show at the Ship with his reunited band, Disaster Noon. We also talk about his creative endeavors, which is what he took on when he was diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis back in 2014, what has happened since those 10 years have passed by, and how he got started in music, his influences, and a whole lot more. It was great to connect with Jerry, and you will hear that right after we feature the newfound releases of the week. These songs came out between December 1st to 7th, and we kick it all off with Corey Poole. We go now to the Poole's Cove native, and he was here in town for a Fortune Bay dance, and congratulations to him and his buddy from Friends of Sam on a great dance. And right now from his brand new Christmas release, here's a tune about Christmas night in Poole's Cove. This is Poole's Cove Snowy Christmas Night on Newfound Releases.
Back when I was young, we played hockey on the pond, counting down the hours till Christmas Day. We'd wake up Christmas morn, go to church and come back home, open gifts and go outside till night and play. And the lights around the town were shining oh so bright. I could smell the wood stoves burning on a Poole's Cove snowy Christmas night. Family Christmas dinners, it was enjoyed by all, a tradition that we keep every year. All the smiling faces round the table filled with joy, sharing lots of love and Christmas cheer. And the lights around the town were shining oh so bright. I could smell the wood stoves burning on a Poole's Cove snowy Christmas night. Oh, the lights around the town were shining oh so bright. I could smell the wood stoves burning on a Poole's Cove snowy Christmas night. On a Poole's Cove snowy Christmas night.
That was Corey Poole with Poole's Cove Snowy Christmas Night. We now go to a frequent collaborator here on the program. We go to DK, and he has a little help from Watts on this next tune. Here's Let Him Hate on Newfound Releases.
This world is my ball, so I let him hang. When I pull this thing, all you bitches best to know my name. This world is my ball, so I let him hang. When I pull this thing, all you bitches best to know my name. This world is my ball, so I let him hang.
They already know the name, DK bring the pain, get the Novocaine. I'm fixing chains, all of the blade, treat him like David Blaine. Disappear like a bad parent, the barricades lifted. You could see the big picture when I'm up on the stage. Like Johnny Cage in the fit of rage, I'm an animal. Kick the enamel off your teeth and mess up your afternoon. I'm massive, good at massive, support the ashes and acid too. Fuck you if you think you're taking these dudes. I'm a rude motherfucker, meet your doom motherfucker. Got the tomb motherfucker, get the room motherfucker. Put them in the dirt like real soon motherfucker. This is Samadhi or Gregor, just lit the spoon off. Katana bleeds with shitty guns and pepper spray. Stick a live grenade in your throat and laugh as you fly away. If they tell me that I'm twisted, hey, that's okay. That's when I flick a finger at them and then they hear me say,
running this bitch like a May train. Getting in this green, that's a game plan. Take a long time for these fake lame with a face bomb as they face plan. Talking a lot of this shit, got your shirt stained. There's a lot of a VB on turn tanks, cause we ain't in plenty. Don't be hurt, man. Rap is getting hungry, so they lurking. Wanting to win on the usual. Every day to be like a ritual. Hop on the ring and we beat you all. We gon' hit you hard, we gon' eat you raw. Say out every digit to your cerebral. And the winner is feel like it's killing all. Fucking this bitch, if you this is raw. Better keep it sharp, cause we keep it sharp. They control or control me, slow or conform me. Broke bozos copying flows, that's a no deal. When I roll with the broski, poke around and your hoes catching nosebleed. Now your Gucci's gonna blow me, cause your game don't play. Talking Gucci, Fendi, Louis, but your pants all fake. Y'all phone is strength with sister Saudi, but it's dry all day. You know this be kicking booty, so your ass gon' wait, sucker.
This is where my balls on my little hang, and I'll put this thing. All you bitches best to know my name, dog. This is where my balls on my little hang, and I'll put this thing. All you bitches best to know my name, know my name. This is where my balls on my little hang, and I'll put this thing. All you bitches best to know my name, dog. This is where my balls on my little hang, and I'll put this thing. All you bitches best to know.
Was DK with a little help from Watts with Let 'em Hate. We now go to Corner Brook based band Horse Chops, and their sound is inspired by 60s garage psych rock, 70s proto punk, 80s post punk, and 90s slacker rock. And this is from their new EP called Bureaucratic Tone, and the band consists of Adam Beardsworth on guitar and lead vocals, Neil Target on bass and vocals, and Craig Kings on drums. Here are Horse Chops now with the title track from their new EP. Here's Bureaucratic Tone on Newfound Releases.
SUVs, seagulls in the slush, we'll watch us so enviously, invite for fries.
That was Horse Chops with Bureaucratic Tone on Newfound Releases. We now go to our next release, which comes from the Trinity Hall Christmas Volume 2 album. What a fantastic album this is. I'll be attending the Majestic Theater showing of Trinity Hall Christmas Volume 2. I can't wait to be in attendance to see all these great performers play some of these Christmas classics and Christmas originals. Our newfound release of the week from that record comes from Julia Dawson. She is a singer-songwriter from Bay Roberts. Here she is now with her take on Noel on Newfound Releases.
Love incarnate, love divine. Stars and angels gave their sign. Bow to babe on bended knee. Savior of humanity. Unto us a child is born, he shall reign forevermore. Noel, Noel, come and see what God has done. God and Son of Man, there before the world began, born to suffer, born to save, born to raise us from the grave. Christ the everlasting Lord, Noel, Noel, come and see what God has done. Noel, Noel, the story of amazing love, the light of the world given for us. Noel, Noel, come and see what God has done. Noel, Noel, the story of amazing love, the light of the world given for.
And that was Julia Dawson from Trinity Hall Christmas Volume 2 with Noel. And it's time to plank her down with Kitchen Party. Now, this song was originally done by Uncle Harry's Bar Band back in 1988, written by Charlie Payne and sung by Wayne Parsons. It was the inspiration for Kitchen Party to record this tune as their manager, David Shears, listened to the tape of Uncle Harry's Bar Band's Christmas growing up out on the West Coast. Well, right now, Kitchen Party put their own unique spin on it, and we're going to play that for you right now. Here is Plank Her Down from Kitchen Party on Newfound Releases.
So plank her down, plank her down. We're going to knock on every door in town. Put aside a kitchen table and pour us up around. Cause you know those mummers are going to plank her down.
1, 2, 3, 4.
What a sorry sight we are heading down the road. There's fellas dressed in underwear and women in men's clothes. Some are wearing rubber boots beneath their granny gown. We're gonna knock on every door in town. So plank her down, plank her down,
plank her down.
We're gonna knock on every door in town. Put aside the kitchen table and pour us up a round, 'cause you know those mummers are gonna plank her down. We'll visit Uncle Walter's first, I knows he'll let us in. He's always got some homebrew and he makes some darn fine gin. He loves to hear the squeeze box when the mummers come around. So go up to his place and plank her down. So plank her down,
plank her down,
plank her down.
Plank her down.
We're gonna knock on every door in town. Put aside the kitchen table and pour us up a round, 'cause you know those mummers are gonna plank her down. Guess we better move along before it gets too late. If I drink any more homebrew, I'll be in an awful state. Grab the squeeze box and the guitar and we'll be on our way. Got a lot of stops before the break of day. So plank her down,
plank her down.
We're gonna knock on every door in town. Put aside a kitchen table and pour us up a round, 'cause you know those mummers are gonna plank her down. So plank her down,
plank her
down. We're gonna knock on every door in town. Put aside a kitchen table and pour us up a round, 'cause you know those mummers are gonna plank her down.
That was Kitchen Party for you with Plank Her Down on Newfound Releases. We're now gonna head down to Cabot Street with Teddy Rowe. Here he is now with said song on Newfound Releases.
Been sitting on this dock for 3 damn days, staring out the window at the crashing waves. The wreck house winds have been coming up, keeps those ships tied to the dunks. But I sit and I think about you, and I wait to ride those waves home to you. I'm sorry, baby, but I am running late. I'm a truck driver on the Cabot Stream. I'm a truck driver who runs on the Cabot Stream. And those big rigs, they just keep rolling in. The demand for the goods, it doesn't stop for the wind. Just blow and blow away, and I wonder when the boats will sail again. But I sit and I think about you, and I wait to ride those waves home. I'm sorry, baby, but I am running late. I'm a truck driving man who runs on the Cabot Stream. I'm a truck driving man who runs on the Cabot Stream. I'm a truck driving man who runs on the Cabot Street.
That was Teddy Rowe for you on Newfound Releases with Cabot Street. Our last Newfound Release of the week comes from the Ennis Sisters. Big shout out to Teresa for sending these along to me. These songs are from an album they put out this past week or so. It is Christmas with the Enna Sisters live in St. John's. Now, this is a live recording of the show at Holy Heart Theater last year, and it sounds fantastic. Best of luck to the ladies on their Newfoundland section of the tour, and they're going to be playing at Holy Heart December 20th and the 21st. Right now, here is a recitation written by Hubert Fury with lead vocals from Karen Ennis. Here are the Enna Sisters now with Christmas the Way It Was on Newfound Releases.
If I could have one Christmas wish, I'd ask Mr. Claus for just one Christmas back in time. Christmas the way it was. The laughter, the warmth, Mom and Dad and us sisters three, and all those times we spent together decorating the Christmas tree. On Christmas morn, we'd race downstairs, and you could not contain our joy to see our stockings bulging with goodies and a toy. A toy, but such a special toy. Perhaps a doll, or maybe a book. But to light up our eyes on Christmas morn, one toy was all that it took. And then Christmas dinner, all the warming smells that settled around the table. Gather around and say family grace. Eat all that you were able. Roast turkey and ham, Jig's dinner. And if that wasn't quite enough, Mom always had fruitcakes for dessert. And of course, the figgy duff. And then after dinner, you'd clear away. That's if you had the chance, because that's when people started coming in and someone was going to dance. Friends and relatives, it didn't matter. They came from everywhere and they filled up all the space that you had. Every day bench and every chair. And the house would ring with laughter of that little happy throng. Someone would get an accordion out and someone else would sing a song. Or we'd all sing songs together. Christmas carols, both old and new. Recite, step dance, or do an old time set. Whatever you wanted to do. And there'd always be some tipsy soul to sing an old time song. Loud enough to raise the roof and be 40 verses long. And then there was the time old Tom came in and, well, he had more than three. He tried to dance with his rubbers on and he fell straight into the tree. But things don't happen like that today. It's not the way that it used to be. Sure, there's music in the stores and there's gifts under the tree. And we still search for that perfect present. But no matter what the cost. And I sometimes wonder as I look around if something has been lost. The buying and the purchasing, the hectic, frantic pace, and the signs of worry and concern on every shopper's face. How often do you hear that it's madness when you meet them in the streets? They're just so caught up in hurrying to the stores that there's barely time to greet. And you have to be invited now before you enter in. To visit unannounced would be some kind of sin. And you have to take your shoes off before you touch that varnished floor. And sometimes it's just as cold inside as outside those freezing doors. Is it possible to bring it back to the way that it used to be? when it wasn't just about the stuff and the amount of gifts under the tree, when friends and relatives gathered around in a friendly, chatty way, without the smartphones and the texting and all that technology of today, and when every stranger that passed by was welcomed at your door, and a child was happy with one toy and didn't crave for more, and when candy canes and oranges were few and far between, and you believed in Santa and angels, even though they were never seen. And then I think, bring it back. Well, Christmas is right here. And the child will come to us again as he's done so every year. And we still have those who are with us now to gift and love and share. And we still have all those reasons why we should love and hope and care. So maybe my wish for the way things were isn't silly after all. Aren't kindness, patience, forgiveness, and love the things that we most recall? And aren't they still within us, ready to shine and glow? Christmas can be the way that it was. We just have to make it so.
And that wraps up Newfound Releases for this week. We have one more batch to go, which will air next week, which is the final episode of the podcast for 2024, so stay tuned for that. If you want to be involved in this segment, head on over to my linktree.com/ZachSnowNL, and you'll find my Newfound Releases guide. It'll tell you everything that you need to know, and if you want to be a part of this segment, feel free to email me, musicalconnectionsnl@gmail.com. It's now time for the second half of the podcast, where we get into the meat and potatoes of the show. I interview musicians and industry professionals about their careers, and it's about time we connected with another singer-songwriter and creative. This time, we're connecting with singer-songwriter, graphic designer, photographer, and a jack-of-all-trades, or a Jerry-of-all-trades, I should say. We connect with Jerry Stamp as he talks about his upcoming show at the Ship on December 21st with reunited band Disaster Noon. And opening the show will be Andrew Rogers, fresh off his album release for Let It Out. And we talked to Jerry all about how the show came together and what has happened over the 10 years since he last released Rogue Doubt, which included getting diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis, becoming uncreative, and being involved in designing graphics, taking photos, and working on shows like Son of a Critch. All that and more in this conversation here on the podcast. So let's connect this week with the one and the only, Jerry Stamp. Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of the Musical Connections podcast, and I am your host, Zach Snow. Well, joining me right now, he is a creative, he has worked in TV and film. He is also a musician first, playing in bands such as King Nancy, and coming up on December 21st at the Ship Pub, he'll be playing with his reunited band, Disaster Noon. And joining me right now to talk all about it is the multi-talented Jerry Stamp. Welcome to Musical Connections, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you so much again for coming on. Big news off the hop here, of course, you're playing at the Ship Pub, December 21st, you and Disaster Noon. So, right off the hop here, how excited are you for this upcoming show on the 21st of December?
I think I'm equal parts terrified and excited right now, just because it's the reason for the show is that it's been like 10 years since my last album, Rogue Doubt, came out. And since then, a lot has happened. I mean, I got developed an autoimmune disease, so I had to stop playing for a while. And then luckily, things got a little bit better, so I started playing again. But I was only doing the occasional acoustic gig. And so because it was the 10th year anniversary, like my old bass player, Brad Madden, also from King Nancy, was saying, like, you know, why don't you do something for the 10-year anniversary? And so I kind of mulled it over for like a couple of weeks. And then I thought, you know, why not give it a shot? Of course, as I mentioned when I was coming in the door, I just finished work on St. Pierre last night. So 8 months of 60-hour weeks. So now we've got like a month before the show, and we still haven't rehearsed or anything yet. But you know, by the time this airs, we'll be tight. So.
Oh, for sure. Now, you said you developed an autoimmune disease around 10 years ago. So what is that autoimmune disease for any?
It's called psoriatic arthritis. It's a semi-rare form of arthritis. It affects the joints, tendons, muscles, skin, whatever. It's kind of like a twofer autoimmune disease because it's basically like psoriasis on crack. So it affects your skin. Luckily, I don't get a lot of the dryness and stuff that psoriasis comes with.
That's good.
But it affects my joints in a different way. So most forms, I'm saying this not as a doctor, most forms of arthritis that I know of, it's usually like a fluid buildup in the joints. But with psoriatic arthritis, it's tissue buildup. So you can't just massage it away and kind of hope for the best. It's very painful.
Yeah, it's not really something that can cure itself. It's something you got to like manage it. Yeah. But it seems like you've managed it quite well. And I think this band show you're going to be doing on the 21st of December is really like your first real band gig in 10 years. Like, it's pretty amazing to know that like, you've come so far ever since you have, since you've gotten psoriatic arthritis. My mom knows a lot about this too. She has it herself.
Yeah. It is one of those autoimmune diseases are a weird thing because every case is its own separate story. There are people who have psoriatic arthritis and it's not a problem to them at all. A little bit of medication, maybe a certain type of shampoo or whatever, and they're fine. Other people, it's completely debilitating. And I've seen both sides of the spectrum so far. So who knows which way it'll go in a week or two. But I still have flare-ups that are bad. But generally speaking, it's much more manageable now.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, Disaster Noon is the band you're going to be playing with at the ship on the 21st of December. How did that band all start?
It's kind of a piecemeal of musician friends, and I needed a backing band. So, as I mentioned, Brad Madden a few minutes ago, Brad has been my forever bandmate, a bass player from King Nancy, played on my solo stuff as well. So, of course, I asked him. My good friend Ian Foster is one of my besties. We've played together a bunch of times over the years. I've sung on his albums. He's played on mine. I used to sing with him a lot back in the day. So it was just, you know, obvious choice. Like, you get a guy like Ian who's a multi-instrumentalist, you know, plays keys, plays guitar.
All super talented.
Can do it all. So I asked Ian if he would do it. And Ian also played on my last record and was in the band then. Needed a drummer. Nick Coltis-Clark is, you know, incredible session drummer in town.
He's tremendous.
Plays everything, every style. I mean, everything from like analog acoustic drums to digital samples and stuff. So kind of everything in between, right? And then my buddy Paul Heppelston, who's living out in Cornerbrook. Paul is a good old friend of mine, and Paul loves the swirly, arty guitar sounds, so he'll kind of fit in the pocket anywhere, really. As long as he knows what key we're in, we're good.
Wonderful. Now, of course, I know who you are, Jerry. I've heard your name for many, many years, of course, with your music right over there, and through all the work that you've done for many other artists, through design, layout, film, and TV. But tell us a little bit more about yourself and, you know, how this all started for you.
Well, my name is Jerry Stamp. I'm from St. John's, Newfoundland, Labrador, Canada, born in 1977. Now you can all hack into my banking. I was a high schooler who got into theater and music. I was tricked into getting into auditioning for the chamber choir. And that started my kind of love affair with classical music. And when I was, upon graduating high school, I didn't know if I was going to choose music or drama to go into. Neither of which is actually a very smart decision for any person to make. Neither of them is, you don't do those careers because you want money. You do those careers because you love what you do.
Exactly.
I ended up deciding to stick with music. If anything, just because I hated the way that you would do like a play or a film or production and you'd become like a fast family with the cast and then the show's over and that's it. It's broken up. It's like having a broken home every like couple of months. Whereas with like, you know, music, I could do it on my own. No, I did end up forming bands over the years. When I was in music school, couple of guys I met throughout that period of time started a band called King Nancy. So it was mostly myself and Mark Turner for a couple of years, just as an acoustic duo. And then we found Brad Madden and Chris Clark at around the same time, bass player and drummer, respectively. And we started playing, and we realized we had something good pretty quickly once we started playing together. I knew that my graduation from university was coming up in like April of whatever year it was, like 2002. So I told the guys like 6 or 7 months before, I was like, when I'm done, I'm moving to Toronto to do this music thing if I can. And they all said, cool, we'll go too. And I just kind of, I asked them again like 4 months before and then like 2 months before, just kind of make sure no hard feelings if anybody wanted to back out. But the four of us all did it. We went together. While we were there, we got jobs working in like restaurants and sort of retail music tangential type things, and just toured and played gigs in around Southern Ontario. Came home a couple times a year to play some festivals and stuff. And King Nancy did pretty well. And all of a sudden one day it was like, we don't need to be in Toronto anymore if we don't want to be. We can go home now. We've made enough connections and all that kind of stuff. But that was also at the, I would say, a temporary pause in the music industry in Canada. Like, we got to Toronto and everybody was getting signed. And 5 minutes later, it was like the mergers between like BMG and Sony and everybody happened. And Universal stopped, had a whole kerfuffle in their own midst. So everybody just stopped signing everybody.
Wow. You
know, they would like, the record people would actually say to us, we love your stuff, but the problem is we don't know how to market you. And that's probably your own fault, because we'd have like a really heavy rock song followed by a love song, followed by like, you know, a poppy, you know, fun song. It's like, for no offense to any Billy Talent fans, but the metaphor I was always using was that like, if you hear one Billy Talent song, that's the album. You know the feeling, right? Every song is going to be that.
Yeah.
That wasn't the way it was with King Nancy. We were never that concise. We were just kind of having fun doing what we did. So anyway, we decided to move home, and then all of a sudden, one of the guys, Mark, decided that he was going to stay in Toronto because he was got himself all in love, and so stayed there with his girl, who became his wife and mother of his children. And so he stays in Toronto. And for a couple of years, every once in a while, Mark would come home and we'd do a King Nancy reunion show for a laugh. But we knew that wasn't really going to be it anymore. So I started focusing on doing solo stuff, and put out a couple of solo independent records. And then I decided to do one full band record, which unfortunately coincided with literally like me stopping performing music like a couple of months later.
Wow.
So while I was writing the record, I knew I had issues, health issues, but nobody really knew what they were. I was like 6 years trying to get diagnosed. And then by the time the record came out, I had been diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis. I started walking with a cane. I had to stop working. I couldn't tour anymore. So I went from like doing like 250 plus gigs in like 2010, touring all across Canada like several times a year, to playing like 7 gigs in 2014.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, like, during that amount of time, at least then you found out that you were diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis. You were able to, like, manage it now. And 10 years later, here you are right now. Like, you don't have the cane anymore. You're walking into the studio normally, just like a normal person would. But, like, at the same time, too, it's great to know that, like, you're doing really well these days.
It's definitely, I mean, like I said before, you have moments, you have days where you have flare-ups. But it's not like, I mean, I was pretty much bedridden for, like, 6 months. Shortly after that album came out. So, it's a thing where you take the wins when you can, but it does put things into a different perspective. Like, the small stuff doesn't bother me anymore. You know, you think about things in a certain light, and that usually means to me, is this important? Does this really affect me? Not just does it affect me, but does it really affect me? And if the answer is no, then I'm like, water off a duck's back and keep moving. So.
Absolutely. Now, of course, I've asked a lot of these kinds of questions about, you know, the entertainment industry and big labels signing everybody and anybody that there was. That's an interesting take that I never knew about, like, with all these, you know, kerfuffles, you know, the mergers with Sony and BMG and then the Universal, you know, screwing up. I don't know, whatever they screwed up there to, you know, make them stop signing everybody. But I think that's probably a big reason why a lot of artists don't get signed anywhere anymore, and you can just, you know, run as an independent artist. But that's even harder nowadays.
Well, it's sort of a weird thing. Like, at that point in time, like, we moved away because at that point in time, the internet was still new. This was only like 2002.
Okay.
People weren't really there were a couple of artists who joined that period of time were signed based on their internet presence. I mean, like Fall Out Boy and bands like that are stories where, like, you know, there's this band on the internet, they got a MySpace page, somehow they rack up 20,000 followers or something, and a record company comes calling. But that was also at a glut. Then, because the internet was there, the record companies were just throwing record contracts at everybody. But record deals started to get worse. So first of all, you had like memo deals, I think is what they were called. And that was like, you basically had, you sign an agreement of understanding so that, you know, if Universal or BMG or whoever came knocking on your door, they would get you to sign a memo deal that basically says, like, we don't have a deal yet, but we're going to work out a deal, so you can't go shop with anybody else.
Wow.
So right off the bat, that's kind of a dumb idea.
Yeah.
But then there's also, like, the point system. You know, most records were sold at a what they call 200 points per record, I believe. And, for example, most artists would only get, like, a couple of points. So it was big when you heard stories like, I mean, locally, Great Big Sea, Alanis Morissette, they all got, like, deals where they worked out, like, huge point numbers, as far as I understand. I mean, not massive numbers comparatively, but, like, 13 points compared to, like, 6, that kind of thing. So you're getting a percentage of the album, so you're making more money off it. Artists started to move more towards publishing contracts and distribution deals rather than signing to a full deal. So when a young band would sign, they'd get an advance from the record label to pay for their album and, you know, pay for their houses or their housing, food, clothes, all that kind of stuff. But that was money they owed the record label back. So if you didn't make a certain amount of dollars, you owed the record label. So that's why you had stories like, do you remember Sloan? Back in the day, Sloan stopped putting out records for, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years.
Jeez.
Because they needed to wait out their record contract. Because they were getting screwed over. So, and that story happens a lot, but of course we don't hear about it very much because it's not very exciting for the press.
Yeah.
But a lot of artists got screwed over at that point in time. And at the same time, the record labels themselves couldn't afford to do what they were doing. So they stopped signing people for, like, a little while, basically.
Yeah, for sure. This is like a documentary and a separate podcast in itself. But I want to go to some of your influences growing up as a musician. Who are some of the artists that you leaned to, growing up as an aspiring musician?
I was a weird kid in that my upbringing had me surrounded by a ton of different musical styles. My mom listened to, like, the Lawrence Welk kind of PBS evening kind of schmaltzy, big band stuff. My dad listened to a lot of 50s and 60s pop and rock, a lot of Irish trad, Newfoundland trad. My sister was like a pop music girl, loved Madonna and all that kind of stuff. But the guys that she hung out with were all into, like, Metallica, Iron Maiden, Anthrax, stuff like that.
Wow.
So I kind of had this, like, I remember having one of those, like, cassette sleeves of, like, 15 cassettes. And it was like Neil Diamond, Iron Maiden, and, you know, Anthrax and I don't know, Bryan Adams or whoever it was.
Oh, wow.
Just a weird, like, cross-section of music at the time.
Great mix of music right there.
But I also feel like at that point in time, popular radio, like top 40 radio, was a really good cross-section of, like, rap and hip-hop, R&B, rock, pop, even some hard rock and metal. And it was very, very all over the place.
So that'd be like late 80s, early 90s for you, right?
Well, growing up, it would have been like late 80s for sure. 90s, I started high school. So, you know, that was kind of the advent of also grunge. So the kind of, you had this, like, you know, pop popular music was taking over, but then all of a sudden you had this sort of counterculture movement with the grunge, what we refer to as grunge, I never liked the term myself, the grunge movement of, like, basically, like, anti-capitalist bands or anti-ism bands. They were all trying to do their own thing and not really worry about what the industry was telling them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty interesting time to be alive musically.
For sure. Now, of course, you formed King Nancy around the 2002. Y'all moved around to Toronto, and then you moved back home. So what do you remember most about those King Nancy days? What were some of your favorite moments about being in King Nancy?
I mean, favorite moments, obviously, the obvious answer is playing on some cool stages, cool venues, and some cool festivals with some cool other artists and stuff. But a lot of it, honestly, it was just four dudes in a van, just ridiculous conversations. You know, you're driving for however many hours. You know, there was one night I remember we left Toronto at 10 o'clock at night to drive overnight to play a weekend in Fredericton. We were offered enough money to make it worth our while, so we just drove through the night and basically just kept each other awake talking about whatever ridiculous stuff came to our minds. And there's some, I think Brad kept a notebook of, like, ridiculous topics and quotes and conversations. Probably should be found and burned, but...
That's like lost media right there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, of course, when you stepped away from music and, you know, did the occasional solo gig here and there, you've taken on Jerry Stamp Creative. Now, looking at your website, there's a load of projects you were involved in. You were doing a layout and design for other artists like Rosemary Lawton. You've done it for Jackie Sullivan. I believe you've done it for Ian Foster in the past as well. And You've also worked in film and TV. Like I said, you work on St. Pierre. You're also working on Son of a Critch, which is going to season 4. St. Pierre is debuting his first season on January the 6th. Tell me a little bit about the creative side of things and what really interests you in, you know, pursuing that.
Well, one of the things that I was interested in high school was design, and more like, I think at the time they referred to it as commercial design, not graphic design.
Okay.
But I wasn't much of a drawer, so I decided to focus on, you know, music and theater instead. Music and theater, not musical theater. I'm not a musical theater guy. Musical theater people would hate me if I was a musical theater guy. I was always intrigued by design, but I never really pursued it. I always kept a keen eye on like what was happening and, you know, cultural shifts of that sort of thing. And of course I was very involved in the way that King Nancy presented itself and the way that the Jerry Stamp, I guess, brand, was done and what kind of styles were used. So when I ended up not being able to do music and I was basically like hanging out at my parents' house for a couple of years, you know, barely able to move, I kind of thought to myself, I need something to do. So I looked into going back to school to do like study graphic design. Cause I figured honestly, worst case scenario, I could do some friends' album artwork with a laptop from my bed, you know, and I did for the first couple of years. I went to school and I studied design and started doing a lot of artwork for other people for albums and stuff. And mostly it started off with friends, then other people came to me and I did win a Music and L Award for Graphic Designer of the Year, which was nice to get.
Congrats.
Because it was nice because it was, you know, it was voted on by people, the industry itself. So it was cool.
Yeah.
And then randomly, I actually moved to Costa Rica for 2 years. I was living there.
Wow.
And because the weather there is much more beneficial to my autoimmune disease than this rainy place.
Oh my God. The past month of rain, drizzle, and fog. Yeah. I think I've seen one day it poured and I'm just like, I'm going to put an explicit tag on this, but fuck this. I do not want to see any more rain, drizzle, and fog. I'm pretty much just asking for snow at this point. But anyways, you moved to Costa Rica.
Yeah, I moved to Costa Rica and I lived there for the most part of 2 years. And then when the pandemic hit, I came home mostly because I needed to get access to a medication that I couldn't get down there called infusion that I get every couple of weeks.
Okay.
And so I managed to get the last plane out of Liberia and get back to Canada. And then I just, I was hunkered down at my parents' place again. And then a friend just called one day and was like, I'm working on this new TV show called The Surrealtor. And they need a graphic designer. Do you want me to put your name in? I was like, sure, why not? And I ended up not getting the job. And then like 2 weeks later, they called and said, we need another graphic designer. Do you want the job? So I just went in to do what's called daily work, which is like you work for a couple of days at a certain rate. And every like week, like Thursday or Friday, they'd be like, can you come back Monday? And so this went on for like 6 weeks. And finally, they just stopped asking me to come back, just kept assuming I was coming back. And finally, after like, I think it was 8 weeks, I was like, you guys know you're still paying me as a daily, right? Because you get paid more as a daily than you do as a regular. And they were like, oh, whoa, we should change that. So anyway, they made me a permanent fixture in the art department there. And then from there, I got on Son of a Critch season 1. And then the rest is history. Just the calls keep coming. So
that is insane. Now, Son of a Critch is one of my favorite locally made TV shows of the decade, really. What are your favorite memories of being on set of Son of a Critch?
Well, that's a bit of a misnomer. I'm rarely ever on set. I'm usually chained to a desk just making content for the sets. We usually get told what the set's going to be, and then we have to design elements of it. Like, for example, if you looked around this room, if we were to design this room for a set, all these photos, all these posters, this banner, all this stuff would have to be designed by the art department because legally we can't clear them. So we have to make our own stuff. So a lot of that is that kind of work. Everything down to the stickers on your laptop to whatever's written on your notebook, any branding that's on anything like the bottles and stuff would all be done.
Yeah. But you take all this for inspiration though.
Oh yeah. You take it all. It's all from the real world, but we have to make our own stuff to fill the real world space. The fun thing about Critch in particular is that Mark is only a couple years older than me. So for all intents and purposes, I am recreating my own childhood while I'm recreating his. So it's been fun for me to like kind of throw things in there. Especially the first 2 years where most of the art department was people from Ontario. And so when they were down here, they'd be like talking about doing things. And I would be kind of not a stickler, but I would definitely be like trying to be as authentic as possible. I'd be like, they were like, we're going to do all these bus ads. I'm like, we never had bus ads back then. I'm like, okay. They'd be like, okay, what about the newspaper? I'm like, we didn't get color newspaper until 1992.
What?
So they're, oh, yeah. Even Telegram didn't go into color until 1992.
Geez, I think that the next season probably feature that, I'd say.
We're if they do a season six, we might go to color. But I think I think right now we're doing 89, 90. And I think next year will be 90, 91. So, yeah.
Awesome. Now, of course, you're also on the brand new show called St. Pierre. That's Hako Productions now in Hako, who's well-known for Republic of Doyle and Caught. What do you enjoy most about, you know, doing work for St. Pierre?
I mean, every show is interesting because you're basically just you're reading the script and mining it for what kind of details you got to come up with. The interesting one thing about St. Pierre is that we're doing design for both some shooting at St. John's and some shooting in actual St. Pierre. So I don't speak French as such. I speak a few words here and there, but we're doing research on like this foreign country and having to try and develop graphics that fit for there, which is different than what we would do here.
Mm-hmm.
So different from Critch, where we're building the late 80s, early 90s, this is modern, but it's not the modern I live in. It's the modern that is just off the Southern Shore. So it's a bit different in that regard. And it's fun to do a procedural type cop show. There's some kind of, I can't really get into much detail about anything without giving away spoilers, but
absolutely,
there's some stuff I've never done before. Like, you know, this is my first time working on a police procedural. So there's a lot of things. Like some of our team had come over from like Hudson or Rex, and they were like, yes, these are things that like every cop show has. Like, you know, your crime boards and your crime scene investigations, that sort of stuff. That while a lot of cop shows have them, each show kind of has its own take. So it was like, how do we do it? That was kind of neat to kind of build that sort of side of things. And then I kind of got stuck in that. It was like, you know, okay, well, Jerry did the first one, so now Jerry's going to be that guy, which, you know, is a nice thing to be like trusted like that. But at the same time, it's like exhausting doing.
Yes. And there's a lot of expectations placed on you too, because of all the work you've done in the past. Yeah. You're saying, hey, Jerry, can you make this? And then you're just stuck there. It was like, oh, what do I do now? Yeah. But it challenges you in a way too. And it makes you become a better graphic designer, in the long run too.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who's a designer in film, and they keep saying that like, they don't think to be a designer in film, you have to be that good. I disagree. I think you have to know when to be good and when to be bad.
Exactly.
Some of the design you have to make for film has to be awful, but it also depends on like, for each thing you do, you have to know, is this what we call a hero thing? Like, is this like something that we want the camera to focus on, or is it background? Because if it's background, we don't want people to be watching the show and be like, what's that thing over that guy's shoulder? It's like, we're stealing the focus then from the actual story. So we have to know what we're doing in what styles and what we can do. And for me personally, like, you can't be doing like a show that's supposed to be the 1980s in St. John's and using like really, really super high-end current printing techniques for signage. It's like, well, we wouldn't have that then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the signs back then would have been like, here's a flat sign with some lights on it. We wouldn't have had a ton of crazy backlit signs with like, you know, translucent things all around them and stuff. So it's kind of fun to look at the problems that come up in the script and figure out how to solve them. I jokingly refer to myself less as a graphic designer and more as a problem solver.
Yeah, like I had Dave Whitty on my podcast about a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about when it came to, you know, getting the gig for East Harbor Heroes, he pretty much had to learn all these positions on the fly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that the hiring committee of that show said that Dave Whitty should do is to be best kind.
Yeah.
So it seems like, though, like, especially when you took that up, when you stopped performing once you got diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis, you got better and better the more designs you did. Even though they were awful to start with, you got better and better and better.
Oh, yeah.
And this is where you're to right now. And it's great to see you, you know, succeed with these shows like Critch and St. Pierre.
I mean, I think it's just one of those things where the more you do something, you should be getting better at it the more often you do it. Like, just because even though some of it becomes muscle memory, it's also like a matter of like, you know, the more styles you collect, the more people you work with, you learn from them. Like, my coworkers on all these TV shows have always been like fantastic designers. And everybody has, one of the cool things about graphic design is everybody has their own way of doing things. There's about 17 different ways to edit the same photo. There's about 14 different ways to make the exact same style of poster, but your poster and my poster would never be the same. Mm-hmm. Even if we came down and said, everybody use this font, everybody use this color, and everybody use this image, there's still going to be different posters.
Absolutely. Now, what are some other projects that you've worked on that we don't really know about yet? Anything you're working on or anything you have worked on that you can let us know about?
Well, I mean, I just finished working on St. Pierre last night, so I haven't, at this point in time, I'm just going to focus on this December 21st show and probably be going back to work next spring with whatever is starting up, ideally St. Pierre season 2 and Critch season 5. In the meantime, I'm sure I'll do some stuff, some work for some people here and there, some freelance things. I kind of would like to do a little bit more personal art design stuff for a little bit, but I don't really know what that's going to be yet. I would like to do some recording. I do have a handful of songs, some of them that we'll be playing on the show at the ship, that have not been recorded yet. I mean, I've got like a phone demo here and there, so I need to actually like, you know, record the not a definitive version because I don't think any song is ever really finished, but like just, you know, record some songs and put out other. I don't know if it'll be an album or like an EP or just a bunch of singles. With streaming these days, I don't really know if it's worthwhile doing an album. So we'll see.
That was actually going to be my next question. Is any recording music in the future? But you pretty much answered that for me.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be in the future. I just don't know when.
Now, how can people get their tickets for the show coming up at the ship on the 21st of December?
The easiest way I could think of to say would be to find, there's links all over my Facebook and Instagram, Twitter or X or whatever the kids are calling it. So I've got those links are posted up there. It's on Ticket Tailor is the name of the actual ticket brokerage company. So you can find it on there. I mean, I guess that's pretty much it.
And for people who want to find out where to find Jerry Stamp and what you're going to be doing next, where can they go when it comes to social media and say a website?
Well, I mean, jerrystamp.com is mostly about my design stuff because that's kind of my focus these days. But usually the posters that I design for my own stuff end up in my portfolio at some point in time, though it is a bit out of date currently, especially because of TV shows. Like, I can't really put things on in my portfolio until the show is aired, so it's a little bit behind in that regard. And what else was I going to ask there? I just lost my train of thought.
So social media?
All right, social media. Well, I mean, like I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Twitter. I did just sign up for Blue Sky, but I've done nothing with it yet. So
I've only made one post on that myself. Yeah,
I feel like the older I get, the less I care about social media. But, you know, I mean, I wasn't a giant fan of social media when I started it, but I used it for music promotions. So when I wasn't doing music as much, it became less of an integral part to my day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember like doing like a seminar course for Music on L years ago, and young musicians were asking the question about social media. And I said, it's kind of like taking antibiotics. You don't necessarily have to like doing it, but you got to take it every day.
Pretty much.
So, but I, you know, I guess I haven't even taken my meds. So,
so Jerry Stamp, I would imagine, is your social media on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much for coming on the Musical Connections podcast to talk about your upcoming show and what else you're doing over the course of the next month or so. Thanks for coming in and thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me, man. Great.
That was Jerry Stamp for you on the Musical Connections podcast. You can head over to jerrystamp.com to find out everything that you need to know about Jerry and look at his massive portfolio. Some of the work that he's done over the past 10 years is incredible. But of course, since Christmas is around the corner, why not play a Christmas tune from Jerry? Here he is now on the Musical Connections podcast with I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day.
I heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men. I thought as now this day had come, the belfries of all Christendom had rung so long the unbroken song of peace on earth, goodwill to my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then pealed the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail, with peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Man, what another great episode of the podcast. Big thank you to Jerry Stan for joining me as my guest this week, and to all the musicians who contributed their songs for Newfound releases. If you want to follow along with anything I'm doing on social media when it comes to this show, follow me on Facebook at Zach Snow, Zach Snow NL on Instagram, and you can also follow the official Musical Connections YouTube channel by going over there and subscribing to it to not miss full-length video forms of my interviews that I have on the podcast each and every week. Well, coming up on next week's show, it is the final show of 2024, and I'd just like to say thank you so much for listening this year. And we wrap up Musical Connections for 2024 with two members of the group Military Road. We talked to Andrew LeDrew and Kalen Mahoney, and we talked to them all about how their new song and Aaron's Pub Christmas came together, the days of Military Road, and their respective musical journeys, with Andrew when it comes to Brothers in Stereo and his solo career, and to Kayla Mahoney when it comes to Gearbox and working on albums for the likes of Mike Hanrahan, Andrew's solo album which he put out this year, Unusual Miracles, and a brand new project he's working on for Alan Ricketts, and a whole lot more. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do so by going to RSS, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. New episodes come out every Tuesday at 12 noon. All my links can be found on my website, waterfrontmedianl.ca/musical-connections-podcast. And that wraps up episode 104 of the Musical Connections podcast. Thank you so much for connecting with me once again this week. I've been your host of the show, Zach Snow. Join me same time next week for the last time of 2024, where once more we will highlight the music of Newfoundland and Labrador. Stay safe, be kind to each other, and until next time, have a happy holidays and safe home.